Hello and welcome to another episode of Soccer Pints, your one-stop shop for all things American soccer. I'm your host, Will Clark. If you aren't familiar, Soccer Pints is an American soccer podcast where we have pointed discussions about U.S. soccer, Americans abroad, Major League Soccer, and many other exciting topics. From time to time, I will be joined by guest hosts, as well as conduct interviews with some of the biggest influencers in American soccer. This past week was a massive week for us as we released two episodes and did our first ever live chat on Twitter, so we had a ton of information to unload. Hopefully, you were all able to learn more about dual nationals and were as excited as I was for the summer roster release. While we didn't see that many surprises and it was somewhat a predictable roster announcement, it's really exciting that the summer friendlies and Nations League matches are right around the corner. This week is the final week before we get into those matches, so in today's episode, I have a lot to cover, mainly thanks to the listeners who have continued to engage and submit more questions than ever before. It allowed us to have a great conversation on the live chat in midweek, and I was able to be joined by my guest host for that feed as well. If you haven't had a chance to listen, the link to the recording is in my bio, and it's well worth your time. So today we're going to cover some highlights from that live chat, including the most popular questions that were submitted over that we discussed. We will also preview the U.S. men's first friendly that will take place this Wednesday, June 1st against Morocco. I will also give a very quick recap into the U.S. Open Cup round of 16 matches from this week, and we'll finish off by answering even more questions and give my final thoughts of the week as well. As I mentioned, I have a lot to cover today, so to help with my speaking, I have a delicious pint that I'm enjoying from Flying Machine Brewing Company, based out of Wilmington, North Carolina, and I've got one of their flagship hazy IPAs in my cup. It's called Electronic Fog. This one is a respectable 6.3% and is as smooth as can be with notes of pineapple and grapefruit. It's one of my go-tos every time I visit their main location, which is a spectacle in itself and is an absolute dream for any brewer or brewery to have. Not only do they have some of the friendliest staff in the game, but they also brew incredible beers and are very eclectic with the variety and styles they produce, which are all phenomenal. They're kid-friendly, pet-friendly as well, so it's an added perk for everyone. So thank you to Flying Machine for letting me feature you in today's episode, and I look forward to enjoying many more delicious pints of yours. So, on Wednesday morning of this week, I was joined by my good friends, award-winning writer Eric Pollan, and the current Charlotte FC Academy goalkeeping coach, Brian Edwards, for the first ever Soccer Pints live chat on Twitter, and I thought it went really well. I loved the interactions and back and forth conversation, but most importantly, I loved getting their perspective on both the U.S. men's national team and Major League Soccer and the various topics we covered. It was definitely unfiltered, uncut, and unedited, so if you have the chance to check the recording out, there's a good bit of information in there, and it was all thanks to the listeners who had submitted questions to us. We were able to address some really popular topics, and it was fun to throw ideas around. So I want to share some highlights from the live chat in the first segment today to kick things off. And obviously, the hottest topic over the past week has been the reaction to the U.S. summer roster announcement. And I know I shared a short episode with Instant Analysis last week, but there have been a lot of people upset over certain players who missed out. People who have questioned the why behind certain decisions that were made. And as always, the inevitable, what does Greg have against John Brooks take that seems to be making the daily rounds on social media? So Eric and I spoke about the intrigue of having Joe Scaley finally in the mix after having a successful season in the Bundesliga, and how anytime you have someone who has performed multiple times against Bayern Munich, they deserve to be called into camp. The fact that Scaley provides an option at left back and also plays right back gives him a considerable amount of flexibility for a final roster spot that others just don't have. He should get some minutes over these next four games and might find himself becoming the top backup at each of those positions moving forward if he can seize the opportunity he has. We also spoke at length about the center back situation given Miles Robinson's injury and who we are most looking forward to seeing together. Cameron Carter-Vickers is a popular man right now after his great season at Celtic. Eric Palmer-Brown is another who is positioning himself for minutes too. Those two together could be the answer. Although I still put Walker Zimmerman and a healthy Chris Richards, who will be absent from this summer camp, in front of them if I had to choose the lineup today. I get the high that fans are on right now with Carter Vickers, but he has never really been tested at the international level, and when he has been given the chance in the past, he's fallen off pretty quickly. He has finally had some consistency at the club level, which has always been an issue. So he is primed to get some minutes this summer and make a real case for himself. And we also talked about the newcomers to the mix, Malik Tillman and Haji Wright. Malik probably being the biggest surprise to the roster, given that he had to get FIFA approval to switch from Germany to the US. but he is a 19-year-old Bayern Munich reserve player who has some versatility in the midfield, out wide, and potentially as a false nine striker option up front too. I haven't seen much of him, so I wonder if this camp call-up is a real test for him to make a name for himself since he isn't getting regular minutes with the full Bayern squad, or what Greg is thinking here. He must think highly of him, or he wouldn't be in camp. And then you have Haji Wright, who I've mentioned week after week. He continues to be in form. He continues to produce goals for this club. He has a real chance to stake a claim in this camp and show us that he can play. And I'm excited to see him as a true playmaking nine with players like Pulisic, Aronson, and or Tim Way flanking him on the outside. Now, one take I have completely agreed with, and what seems to be what every U.S. men's national team fan, except for those Seattle-based fans, is that Christian Roldan doesn't deserve to be on the summer roster. And I've said it time and time again that I just don't rate a player who claims he is with the team for good vibes and to be the eyes on the training pitch for the team. I just feel that we have other options we could have given chances to. And as I said on the live chat, if Roldan is getting minutes for us at the World Cup, we will seriously be in a world of trouble. One player who wasn't called into camp that a lot of fans were really upset about is John Brooks. I had a hunch that he wouldn't, but I did feel his play in the Bundesliga was deserving of a call-up, especially given Miles Robinson's injury situations and with Chris Richards being out of camp. But as Eric pointed out in the chat, he seems to act like he doesn't want to be there when he has been called up, and he doesn't have a club right now, and he's also played a ton of minutes this season. So to Eric's point, Greg Berhalter did come out and say that his national team time is not over and that he wanted Brooks to find a club this summer and felt that was more important right now. I don't know if I necessarily believe that from Greg, but I really could go either way on this topic. Brooks would be a solid 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th man on the U.S. roster for depth and the experience that he provides. If he needed to be called upon on the biggest stage in the world, I personally wouldn't be upset about it. And speaking of having to find new clubs this summer, we also spoke about players within the U.S. men's national team who need to find a new place to get consistent playing time next season to further enhance their chances at a role in November. Brendan Aaronson is the first one to fall through. He just booked a $30 million deal with Leeds United, and I think he fits in really well into their lineup. He does the dirty work that a lot of other attacking midfielders just don't do. He's also going to be managed by an American in Jesse Marsh, who took over the head coaching role at Leeds back in February and helped them fight off relegation on the final day of the Premier League season last week. But who else should look for a new home? Christian Pulisic is being mentioned due to the inconsistent time with Chelsea this season, and while I agree he needs to be having a bigger impact, he is still young. He is still producing when given the chances. I'm just not in the crowd of necessarily feeling he has to make a move right now. As much as I hate to utter these next words from my mouth, Chelsea is a very talented top club, and Pulisic would benefit from the world-class training and matches he gets there. Sergiño Dest is another player, currently at Barcelona, who might be on the move. He wants to stay, but he is going to have some serious competition for playing time with some of the expected new arrivals. So I do think it would make sense for him to make a move, and I think there are a couple of ideal spots. His former manager at Ajax just took over at Man United, and there is a glaring need at right back there right now. Not sure if Man United's the best place for him since he'd be under the same pressure every single second there as he's been at Barcelona. But I think an ideal scenario is Leeds United, and I get the American connection. But I see him being able to join a team that finished close to the bottom of the table, who should really improve next season, and that would allow Dest to be a major part of it, similar to what Aronson's done or is going to do. We had a couple more players we mentioned, like Zach Steffen, Jordan Pefock, Tyler Adams, maybe a Weston McKennie. But an idea that I had and a suggestion I made is that Greg Berhalter needs to give Jesse Marsh a call and plead to him to sign every men's national team player he can so that we can get all of these guys together for a few months, consistently playing together leading into a November World Cup, and then we will be a well-oiled side that nobody can stop. It won't happen, but Leeds is an attractive spot for a few of our regulars. So Greg, Jesse, I know you're listening to me. Let's make this happen sooner rather than later. In addition to the U.S. men's national team conversation during the live chat, Brian really gave some great insight into Major League Soccer and the next wave of talent that is coming through the ranks in our MLS academies and the production they are creating, developing talent the right way right now. MLS academies are not pay to play like it was in my young playing days. It is all about performing. You have to earn your spot in the academies. This is a completely different change from the pay-for-play. As Brian mentioned, it is required to function with MLS to have a completely free academy setup, which is great. They get professional coaching, support staff, nutrition education, sports psychology, aside from the 90 minutes of training every single night, and all sorts of high-level competition, which will tremendously help improve the development of the players themselves. We have MLS Next Pro, which is a new league that allows reserve MLS players and some of the top young academy players to allow themselves to push against men and test themselves even more to build those experiences that can then translate to a full professional game. No matter your age, if you are showing the talent and within the academy, you can play up as much as you'd like. Brian gave an example of a young man born in 2008 who is currently training every day with the Charlotte FC U17 setup right now, which is wild to me. But what an experience for the individual to get at that young of an age. And while we had Brian on, we also talked about the potential for future MLS promotion and relegation setup. I mentioned I had never spoken about this before on here, but with 28 teams currently in MLS and more to come in the future, it seems very crowded. And after watching the thrills of the weekend from England's battle, it seemed like a perfect time to bring it up. And we were all in agreement that it will just never happen here. Between the financials involved to function as a club, to get academy set up, to get operationally sound, it would just be too big of a leap for any of the sides to do this. Eric made a great point about TV revenue, the league control into everything, the infrastructure that isn't in place, the apparel deal MLS has league-wide versus individually in clubs. It just doesn't allow for the same approach that other countries have with their own promotion and relegation systems. But if it ever does happen, I think we can all agree, it will really generate even more interest and commitment from owners to make sure that their clubs are producing on the pitch. So again, that was such a fun time doing the live chat, getting some other perspectives on here, and I hope everyone gets a chance to listen to it and can join us in the future. If we are able to consistently do things, I think it's a perfect opportunity to continue to learn more and get fresh takes on various topics. So stay tuned for more chats in the near future. I had so many great questions thrown at me this week, and with all of the discussion around the U.S. men's summer roster and upcoming friendlies, two of the questions I really liked were around the first friendly against Morocco on Wednesday, June 1st, and based on that roster, who I would start in that match, and what is my prediction for the match? So obviously great questions, and I plan on giving an overview into every match we have this summer. So this week, I'll break down Morocco's matchup first, and then next week, I'll break down the Uruguay friendly on June 5th before I get into the Nations League matches. And I really don't have that many expectations heading into the match against Morocco. I think it's an excellent chance for us against a very high-quality team to gain some experience and will allow us to test out some tactics that we'll need to utilize at the World Cup. Morocco might not be the flashy of its opponents on paper, but they play a very similar style that we'll face in Qatar. England, Iran, and whoever the European playoff winner is, all play compact, defensive styles that are tough to break down, and that is exactly what Morocco plays and exactly what the U.S. struggles with. Morocco qualified top of their World Cup qualifying group without losing a match. They scored 25 goals and only conceded 3 in those 8 matches. They are in a brutal group for the World Cup themselves, having Belgium, Canada, and Croatia in their group. So the U.S. also gives them some similarities to their opponents. So both squads should really be coming into this match with the intention to play their strongest sides and to try to find a few new things out about themselves. The match itself is set to be played in Cincinnati, Ohio at the TQL Stadium, which opened last May 2021 and recently hosted the U.S.'s World Cup qualifying 2-0 win against Mexico. There should be 26,000 pro U.S. fans supporting the team as well, so the environment should be excellent on the evening. I am really hoping to see some progression out of Greg's team. He has some pretty set tactics and formations, and this really ought to be a chance for him to put out the strongest formation he can to see what works and what doesn't work. Will I be upset if we lose? Sure. Will I put much stock into the performance if we lose? Not really. I hope we try different things, different styles, encourage players to be less conservative in their own playmaking, and try new things out. Build some confidence for some of these young ones that are called in. Allow one or two of the new faces into the fold to see how they integrate into the squad and take some positives out of the performance. Again, this is just a friendly, but it's a part audition for some, part testing the waters for other, and part allowing Greg to open up his playbook a bit and test a solid Moroccan squad. Who would I like to see in the starting lineup on Wednesday night? I really want us to put the best 11 on the field that we possibly can. I know some have tired legs and have had long seasons, but at a minimum, let's get them the first 45 minutes or so to see how they look together. And I would have started Zach Steffen in goal, but due to family and personal reasons, he will now no longer take part in the camp. So that really paves the way for Matt Turner to start and own the job this summer and heading into the World Cup. I would start Joe Scaley at right back. I would start Cameron Carter-Vickers and Walker Zimmerman in the center of the back line, and I'd have Anthony Robinson at the left back spot. In the midfield, I would put in Adams, McKinney, and Musa to get some run together. On the front line, I would start Pulisic out left, Weah on the right, and Jesus Ferreira manning the nine spot. So a 4-3-3 formation, which I think is our strongest formation. During the live chat, Eric did suggest that Greg tends to prefer three center backs at times, and he's absolutely right. But I hope we start off on the front foot and don't go with a 5-4-1 type of formation that we go more offensive right away. So that leaves out Brennan Aaronson, who I'm extremely high on. And I think he could start. But since he is still in England sorting out the details to this transfer, he might not be able to slide right into the squad for Wednesday. That also leaves out Eric Palmer-Brown, who I'm high on at center back. And he might start over Cameron Carter-Vickers. Maybe we see Haji Wright thrown straight into a starting nine role as a true striker, since Ferreira is more of a false nine. Will I be upset if one of these 11 players doesn't start? No. Will I put stock into those that Greg puts in and who he leaves on the bench? Maybe slightly. But again, this is a friendly. This is a match that is meant to provide us with an opportunity to work on a few things and try some new stuff out. At the end of the day, I do expect us to win, and I see a 2-1 scoreline in the U.S.'s favor. Well, a few episodes ago, I gave an update in the U.S. Open Cup, and as time continues to fly faster than ever, the round of 16 in the tournament took place Wednesday night. We had several MLS squads facing off against each other, as expected at this stage, but we also had some USL squads in the mix too. So let's attack the all MLS matchups first. And in an all-Florida affair, we saw Orlando City face off against Inter Miami, and after a hard-fought 1-1 draw through extra time, Orlando prevailed in penalties to put themselves through to the quarterfinals. We also had New York City play New England, and the Revolution needed an extra time goal to score in the only goal in their win on the road. In New Jersey, Charlotte FC traveled north to play the Red Bull in a very foul-driven contest. Despite the match being tied at halftime 1-1, the Red Bull managed to score two more goals in the second half and move through to the quarterfinals, where they will next face the Revolution. Sporting KC played Houston at home and came out 2-1 winners. They will move on to the quarterfinal themselves against a really intriguing opponent that I will mention shortly. The LA battle between the Galaxy and LAFC saw the Galaxy run out 3-1 winners. In those other three matchups, Minnesota from MLS took on the Union Omaha from USL League One, and we saw the biggest upset happen with Union Omaha winning on the road 2-1. Union Omaha gets to face Sporting KC in the quarterfinals next. San Jose went on the road to the Sacramento Republic of the USL Championship, and they were also upset 2-0. Sacramento will now try to knock off another MLS opponent when they face the LA Galaxy in their quarterfinal matchup next. And Nashville visited Louisville City, also from the USL Championship, and despite scoring first, Louisville ultimately lost in the final minute of the match to lose 2-1. Nashville will now face Orlando City for a chance at the semifinals. All in all, while I was disappointed to see Charlotte get knocked out of the tournament, it was pretty cool to see two non-MLS clubs pull through and win in their respective matches. I was really hoping Louisville City would do the same, but it wasn't meant to be. The quarterfinal matchups will now take place on June 21st. This Flying Machine beer is really, really good, so I encourage you to try it. I can't stop having it. But as I move forward, right, I mentioned some more questions. We had a ton of great questions over the past week, mainly regarding the U.S. men's national team and some MLS ones as well, which I love to share my opinions about, obviously. And while we covered a lot of them during the live chat, I wasn't able to cover all of them. So Let's hop into a couple of others really quickly. And a disclaimer here, I'm not going to name names this week since we had so many, but you know who you are, so thanks again for submitting them. And first up, somebody submitted in. I was watching the Tampa Bay Lightning playoff game, and they introduced former U.S. men's national team player Julian Green to the crowd. Is his career finished? So I went online to find this, and if anyone has seen it, you can clearly see Julian's face kind of cringe the second the announcer says former. I've mentioned Julian being the only U.S. men's national team attacking prospect in our talent pool who has actually scored a goal in a World Cup. The only other player in the pool to have also scored a goal is John Brooks. Both are German-Americans. Both were Jurgen Klinsmann favorites. Both are out of favor with Greg Berhalter. Both played a lot of minutes in the Bundesliga this season. Both saw relative success for their teams that they were on. It's a weird coincidence. Just too many overlapping similarities here. And I would have preferred Julian in the mix rather than someone like Christian Roldan, if we're being honest. He's much more creative. He offers a lot more to the squad. And just like Brooks, he is on the back end of the roster. But he is someone that if you had to throw on as a sub for whatever reason, he has exposure to that moment. Some experience that nobody else does. And for that reason alone, I hope his career isn't over with the U.S. men. But then again, if we want to continue to be honest here, if he is never called up again, I wouldn't throw my arms up screaming about it. He is a fringe player in the squad, and it's really not worth arguing over these final few spots when those individuals really should never be on the field unless an absolute disaster happens. Next up, none of the dual nationals you mentioned in our summer roster, or none of the dual nationals you mentioned made our summer roster. Is there a reason they didn't? Do they not want to play for the U.S.? So for this one, I wanted to make sure I knew who you were asking about, but never heard back to confirm. So assuming you're bringing up Richie Ledesma, Jonathan Gomez, and or Gabriel Slonina, each have different reasons for not earning a call-up. In Richie's situation, he just had a long recovery back from a torn ACL, had a successful season climbing his way back into the first team at PSV, and scoring his first goal for the club on the final match of the season. While being in great form isn't always positive, needing a rest could be the real reason for him here. He had a lot of media speculation suggesting that he was committing to Mexico, and then he wasn't on their roster. We all assumed this meant he was on the U.S. roster, and then he wasn't. It could absolutely be that he had a long season, needs a rest, needs to make sure he doesn't overextend or risk re-injuring himself. It could also be that he isn't fully ready to commit to either country and would rather not deal with that right now and wants to focus on his offseason for the club. Not fully sure, but with Richie, I feel like his heart is with the U.S. and we could see him in September if he continues the climb he's on. Now for Jonathan Gomez, he's had a ridiculous path from Louisville City in the USL to Real Sociedad's B team to making an appearance in a friendly for the U.S. men to making an appearance in a friendly for the Mexican men. He's still only 18. He won't turn 19 until September. It's a pretty wild trajectory. The fact that neither nation called him in right now is perplexing for sure. He has so much potential, but he is still just playing in a second division side in Europe. There are still others in front of him that also deserve their call-ups. It's tough. You can't just call someone in during an important window because you want to try to lock them down. I'm not sure he's fully ready for it yet. Maybe he is another who isn't sure who he wants to represent, so he decided not to join either team yet. But the sources that be have claimed that he didn't even get invites for either. So I'm really not sure where he ends up going here. And then we have Gabriel Slonina, who 30 minutes before the U.S. roster was released, made his own news by announcing he was committing to the U.S. instead of Poland and had rejected the Polish call-up for this summer. This led many, including myself, to immediately speculate that Slonina must have been on the U.S. roster, yet the roster released and his name wasn't there. Greg said it was due to his recent form and that he was very happy to see the commitment. He had spoken to Slonina and told him to keep working and improving. Yada, yada, yada. Now, I saw recent highlights of Slonina, and he really has struggled the past couple of weeks. Maybe it was the early season hype. Maybe it was the internal decision of Poland's interest in him versus feeling the need to declare himself to the U.S. Whatever it has been, he needs to continue to keep working on his form, keep working hard, And then he can grab that third goalkeeping spot for the World Cup. What really surprised me, though, is that when Stefan withdrew, Berhalter decided to call up Sean Johnson instead of Slonina. So, little surprised with that, but either way, I think the 18-year-old continues to make moves. He'll probably be somebody that we see making a big transfer in the next couple of months as well. Well, on to my final thoughts of the week for me, and I'll try to keep it short, but being the final matches for most of the European leagues, we saw quite a few Americans performing on the weekend. In France, Tim Weah put in the most productive display for Lille, notching two goals in their 2-2 draw, which is some solid momentum for him heading into the camp. And while he was scoring, we also got to see some other U.S. standouts return to the pitch in Italy after recovering from an injury. Weston McKennie came off the bench for Juventus and got 14 minutes in their season finale. I think I mentioned Weston was called into the summer camp, and I don't expect him to feature that much due to just getting back up to fitness, but this is a really positive sign for the program. In another great moment for a U.S. regular, Tyler Adams and Red Bull Leipzig lifted their first ever German Cup trophy after winning the Pokal final against Freiburg in penalties. Adams played 21 minutes off the bench. From the U.S. women's national team, we had two of our national team regulars feature in the Women's Champions League final between Lyon and Barcelona. Lindsay Horan went the full 90 for Lyon, while her teammate, Katarina Macario, also went the full 90 for Lyon and scored the third goal in their 3-1 triumph. Pretty cool moment for them, too, given that Barcelona was the favorite to win it all after an undefeated perfect season in their league. And with all of the promotion battles going on during the weekend, we had an American fighting in England to be promoted to the English Championship with Sunderland. Lyndon Gooch has spent almost his entire career with Sunderland. Since 2012, he has represented them over 180 times in all competitions. Sunderland was a Premier League team as recently as the 2016-2017 season, where Gooch featured 11 times. But since then, they have plummeted in the English leagues, being relegated two seasons in a row and finding them the past four seasons in the English League One, essentially the third division in English soccer. So, after their 2-0 win on the weekend, you couldn't fault Gooch and his teammates for the emotions and their celebrations. It's been a long road back for Sunderland. Gooch has featured four times for the US men, and despite his long career with Sunderland and only being 26 years old, he is not currently on the radar for a return to the national team. Lastly, as we head into the Memorial Day weekend, I want to make sure we take a moment to remember the U.S. military personnel who have sacrificed their lives while serving for the country. I know the long weekend is typically filled with beach time, barbecues, and fun, but try to remember what the holiday is all about, and please stay safe doing so. Well, that's it for today's episode. It's an exciting time for U.S. soccer, and with the friendlies beginning next week, we should have a lot to talk about in the next episode. Not only will we be reviewing the performances from that match, but we will also preview the second friendly against Uruguay and hopefully have some more direction on potential transfers in the summer for U.S. players. Also, plan to join myself and hopefully Eric and Brian again next week to discuss U.S. Morocco and other topics in the live chat on Twitter. As I mentioned last week, I'm working very hard behind the scenes to try to lock up additional interviews, but I still need your help. The more likes, shares, subscribers, favorites, views, and downloads of the podcast that I can get, the more likely someone is to join and record that interview with me. So thanks again for the support this past week. And as always, please send over any questions, thoughts, or feedback to me. Lastly, thanks again to Flying Machine Brewing Company for allowing me to feature their delicious beer and for letting me give them a plug on here. The Wilmington beer scene is some of the best in the state, and they are one of the driving forces behind it, so please go check them out. Until next time, cheers, my friends.